It's over. It's all over. The drought. The damn wall is busted. It's 62 long years.
It's over. It's over. Cleveland is a city of champions once again. The Cavaliers are NBA champions.
Got it.
This is the Sports Desk Podcast right here on SEN. Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Sports Desk Podcast here on SEN. I'm your host Ben Pascuzzi and alongside me, as always, is Lucy Watkin.
Hello everyone, how are we? How are you, Ben?
I'm good, thanks. Yourself, Lucy?
Yeah, very good, thank you. Coming off a win this afternoon in football, so I'm feeling very good, thank you.
And who'd you beat?
I played for Whitehorse and we played Deer Park. I kicked 2 goals and we won 64-12, I think.
Beautiful, so massive win. So on that note, we do have a massive show to go through. So we've got a bit of basketball, a bit of soccer and some tennis, but we'll stick with footy and we'll start off with one of the major talking points this week, and that is Collingwood and the question of Nathan Buckley's future. Now, is it a matter of when, not if, for Buckley?
I think after the win today against Geelong,
Massive win against Geelong today.
I think the question has... The waters have become a bit more murkier as compared to earlier in the week when they were done by the Bombers on Anzac Day. And to be honest with you, I don't blame Buckley for the loss on Anzac Day. I think Essendon was always going to win that game.
Yeah.
Mainly just because of the emotion of all those players coming back, Anzac Day being a huge occasion. So I think if... I honestly think if Collingwood got Essendon any other day of the week, they would have beaten Essendon. But unfortunately, they went down Anzac Day. Quick turnaround, massive win against Geelong. Pendlebury also, I've seen, stepped up in this game as well.
Particularly after getting whacked by Buckley as well early in the week after the Anzac Day clash.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it's not Buckley's fault, and his players have come in defence of him. I think he needs his players to stand up. That's what I think. So I don't think it's if or when. I think there's still a long season ahead of us. And I think he still has a point to prove. But I'm not convinced that just yet that they'll just cut him loose.
See, I don't want him to get cut loose. I mean, I see that it's clearly the players. But I think just time and time again, Collingwood will probably have another down patch. Their kicking efficiency will again be poor. I mean, today they kicked fairly straight. They only kicked 15 goals, 17 behind. So it was only 2 shots difference between goals and behinds there. So a fairly accurate day in Collingwood standards. So previous weeks they've been extremely inaccurate. And it's not just that, it's also their field kicking. So that's what's let them down in previous weeks. But I think, yes, when Collingwood eventually have this down patch, which is just inevitable. We know with Collingwood they're just full of ups and downs and the ups are just only so short. I think that the hierarchy there, like Eddie McGuire, I think that the the fan voice will come into play here, and just speaking to many Collingwood supporters, they want him gone.
Yeah.
They don't want him. So unfortunately, I think that's going to be the case. And this is also particular because Brad Scott also this week came out and said that he and North Melbourne may come to a mutual agreement to part ways at the end of the season. So if that talk starts to fire up, then potentially he could replace Buckley, and Buckley could eventually go by the end of the season.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I think if Buckley... I don't think there's any point in Collingwood cutting him loose during the season.
No point.
Yeah. I don't think there's any point. Like, I think he has to coach out the season. But I think if Collingwood don't make finals this year, then he'll be gone.
Yeah, well, Buckley said it himself.
Yeah,
he said,
exactly.
If don't make finals, then I'm in a bit of strife here. So, yeah, be very interesting to see what Collingwood do there. Now, also, we'll move on to some other clubs who are in a bit of a down at the moment. That's Hawthorn and Sydney, and we don't usually talk about these two teams, especially particularly Sydney, who's had an extremely long reign of success for around 12 years since that 05 grand final. So it's the end of the two dynasties, you can say. So where to now for the two clubs? We'll start off with Hawthorn, first of all.
Well, Hawthorn, have really shown that they're struggling now, considering they lost yesterday in Launceston.
I think that was really big, because Launceston's like a fortress for them.
Yeah, I was about to say, I was like, it's like the fortress walls have fallen. Like, they're not the team they once were. They're getting beaten in a place where they've always won since 2000. They won the last 17 games there, 12 games or something. 12,
yeah, 20, something like that. Yeah.
Something like that there. So, and especially against the Saints, who were not a convincing side.
Mm-mm.
which is huge, and it's their third loss over 70 points in six games. And so everyone thought that it was going to be okay after the West Coast win last week, but that was clearly just because West Coast don't travel.
Oh, they're terrible.
They just don't travel well.
Mm-hmm.
So I think for Hawthorn, it's just building. Like, they've just got to build the list, because I think I've said it before on the show that they'd obviously just been complacent with what they've had with those older players. They've been complacent in them just continuing on their form.
Yeah.
But as your players get older, it's just not, they're not going to be able to play the way they did, especially when they don't have young players coming through to help sort of the delivery and the efficiency of, like, disposals and things like that. It's too much pressure on those older players. Do you think the same?
Yeah, I'm starting to think the same. I mean, even a couple of years ago, Box Hill, Hawthorn and Box Hill were just powerhouses of both the AFL and VFL, so Hawthorn would have plenty of firepower in Box Hill just to bring back up, and it's just not there anymore.
Well, on that note, the VFL side, the Box Hill Hawks, have won three in a row.
Mm-hmm.
So,
got to blood some youngsters
exactly.
now.
Exactly. They've got to bring some of those players up that are obviously doing very well in the Box Hill Hawks into the senior list, pump them through some AFL games, and figure out what is our next, like, what's the next step, sort of thing.
Yeah, well, they can't tank, because all their draft picks over the next two seasons be traded, particularly their first round draft pick for this season, that's been traded to St Kilda, which was pointed out in their banner on the weekend quite mischievously.
One.
So, yeah, they tanking's out of the question. So it's just it's so weird seeing Hawthorn just lose by 75 points at Launceston, and especially after last week, we thought, yeah, like you said, we thought they were back on track after West Coast, but yeah, as we know, West Coast don't do too well here at the MCG, and maybe it was just a one-trick pony for them. So,
yeah.
Hawthorn, dynasty's over, you could say, definitely. And, yeah, it's just they've got to start blooding their youngsters now. Yeah. I think they've got to drop players such as, Sean Burgoyne.
Yeah.
You wouldn't drop Roughhead yet, even though he's in terrible form, but he's just come back in. So, we'll see about that. But is Hawthorn's demise thanks to the loss of Lewis? Or do you lay any contribution to that? Or is it just that their ageless stars are just coming to the end of their season and they're just starting to get a bit worn down?
I think it is just because they're getting a little bit worn down. But it does beg the question of, like, yeah, how would they be if they had Sam Mitchell and Jordan Lewis still? Because Sam Mitchell is doing pretty well over in West Coast. And Jordan Lewis, aside from his suspension earlier in the season, he's been very, very good for Melbourne as well. But I think
He's Melbourne's best player.
He's Melbourne's best player, exactly. Yeah. But I think Hawthorn letting them go, it just seems to me that it's like it's a club problem. It's not something that you can pin on individual players.
I think Mitchell was pretty much gone already, and Hawthorn and West Coast, with Clarkson and Simpson, the two respective coaches, they'd already made a deal so that Mitchell go there, finish his career, then he'll come back as an assistant coach for Hawthorn. So that deal's already in place. Just Lewis is just the interesting one, because Lewis is such a key part of that back line for Hawthorn, and even pushing through the midfield he has through the latter part of his career. He's just been huge for them, and his leadership has been massive, and that's something that's been, I feel, under... we'll move on. I'll think of the word when it comes. But yeah, it's just, it hasn't been what it's like there at Hawthorn. I mean, yes, Hodge, he's a great leader himself, but I think the chemistry that he had with Lewis and just that, like, that club-like feel that they had was gone when Lewis went. So maybe you could play some part with Lewis going into Hawthorn's demise, but not a great deal. But it's definitely a key contributor to that. So we'll move on now to Sydney. Yeah. What is going on up there?
Well, I'm a Sydney supporter, so I'm, like, very upset about it. Mm-hmm. And I was at the game yesterday at the MCG where we obviously lost to Carlton, which is a bit devo, but I do find solace in the fact that I worked for the AFLW team, so I'm kind of like, at least it's a team that I kind of like.
Yep.
But at the same time, I'm like, Carlton also hasn't been the best this season, nor the last couple of seasons. So we should have... That was our chance to sort of assert ourselves and show that we are a team that can win. But watching yesterday and watching the Sydney Swans this season, we honestly look like we did in the last quarter of the grand final, which was we just didn't want it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why Western Bulldogs won that premiership, because they wanted it. They wanted the ball. They wanted to kick goals. They wanted to win. Sydney honestly look like they don't want to win. That's honestly how I see it. And also, Buddy wasn't playing up front yesterday. He was being pushed into the middle. So he had little influence in the middle. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I just think we're just a team that can't win anymore. Something has to change because they just don't look like they want to win either.
Similar to Hawthorn, is it just that your stars are starting to get a little bit to the end of their career, just a bit tired and all that? Mm. Is it recovery,
well,
all that?
It's not even that, because it's like when Sydney go, they go. Mm. There were some beautiful passages of play between those guns, like Daniel Hannabry and Sam Reid and Josh Kennedy. Our new captain who hasn't won a game as captain yet.
Yeah.
It's just that they just don't look hungry enough. They don't, like, have the pressure. They don't hold it for long periods of time. They're making silly mistakes. And I just think it comes down to the fact that there's, like, something culturally must be going on because they honestly just don't look like the team they were last year even.
Mm-hmm. Very unfortunate there for both clubs there, Sydney mm-hmm. and Hawthorn. So we'll stick with AFL, but we'll move to the AFLW. There's been talks about an extension that's been brewing for a while now, and the AFL board is going to heavily consider it mm. in the coming weeks. So should an extension happen as early as next season?
So it sort of came out in the media 2 weeks ago now by Caroline Wilson in The Age, and she sort of put forward that Geelong and St Kilda were heavily making the case for having AFLW clubs next season. It went to the commission who were reviewing the AFLW season, and they've postponed the trade period, which was meant to start this week, and they've postponed it so they can seriously consider this expansion move, which, and everyone knows this on the sports desk, I'm the biggest AFLW fan ever, like mm-hmm. huge, covered it heaps, but I do not want to see an expansion. I just don't want it to happen. It's too soon. And you talk to the players, like, which I have, and they just think if there was an expansion, the competition would be stretched. Like, it was already stretched mm-hmm. this season. And you don't want to do it until you've consolidated the product that you already have.
Yeah.
Which hasn't been done yet either. So I just don't think, as much as Geelong and St Kilda, who played last week, Hawks, who have a VFL team now, Kangaroos, who have partnered with Melbourne Uni, and Tigers with Bendigo and stuff like that. The AFLW academies that are happening now, and, you know, TA Cup is happening now. They're all great initiatives, lots of talent in those, but they're not at the level yet where you can bring in those in two whole new clubs.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree totally there. I think it's just the talent and the level that the football is going to be played at. Like you said, it's already stretching. It's only their first year at a professional level. Mm. So give them time. Give them at least 2-3 years to develop that. Let these young stars come through the TSA Cup, the new partnerships that are going, then bring them some new teams when we know the standard isn't going to deviate.
Yeah.
So I think just wait, hold off, let this develop into what it is at the moment, because it's massive. Let's be honest. It's huge. And just the way that even now the TSA Cup girls are coming in, it's great. It's
exactly.
great for the sport, great for the girls all out there. So let's just keep it the way it is, wait 2-3 years,
then,
wait for them to develop their professional standard, because it's going to take them time. It doesn't
exactly.
happen just like that. It doesn't happen tomorrow.
It doesn't happen just like that. And then also on, like, sort of a logistical kind of level, it's like they want to have a finals series next year, so they want to have that extra week of finals, so it's not just 1v2 playing off, which I think is a good idea.
That's good.
But they were struggling to find a week to hold that. So they were struggling to figure out how they were going to extend the season for that 1 week of finals games. So how are they going to, in what is a short amount of time between now and the start of the season, find an extra three?
Yeah.
So it's just, it's tiny things like that.
When should they play it? Should they keep it at the start of the season, or?
I think they need to keep it at the start of the season for now.
Mm-hmm.
In later on, in 10 years' time, I reckon it would be good for them to play alongside the men's season. Like, that would be great, but that can only happen when you've consolidated the product. You have all of the talent.
Yeah.
And ideally, every single club has their VFL has a VFL pathway mm-hmm. and has their own team.
Yeah,
that's
correct,
that can
correct
happen.
Me if I'm wrong, the players from the AFLW will still be going back to their clubs for the remainder of the season.
Yeah.
That's correct, yeah?
Yeah, so you have, like, Darcy Vessio, Katie Brennan all going back to the Falcons. Like, Meg Hutchins from Collingwood will go back to Eastern Devils. You got new talent coming through, Box Hill Hawks,
yeah,
and all that kind of stuff. So they all go back. So I reckon they just need to consolidate the product that they yeah have, and then hell for leather after that.
Yeah, because yeah, this is be that's just perfectly sums up my point there. Because the fact that they're still going back to other clubs,
yeah,
is just something that says, all right, we want this to be the premier level. So it's just like, that's VFL standard, that's the reserves, whatever. So we want that to happen. So eventually, hopefully, it becomes that.
Exactly.
But just for the while now, 2-3 years, keep it like that. So then eventually the players can just play that professionally, hopefully get enough money for it. So
yeah,
we'll see how we go with that.
Consolidate.
That's exactly. Yeah. Consolidate what you've got. And our last AFL topic, we're going to be a bit dubious here. We're going to go with our quarterly predictions. So premiers, Lucy.
Premiers, I think it's hard for now to go.
Of course
go.
It's hard, but that's the point.
Exactly, that's the point. I think we'll have an Adelaide GWS Grand Final.
Who wins?
Adelaide. Yeah. Only because Adelaide's forward line is ridiculous.
I've got the same Grand Final, but because it's a show and we want to have two sides, I'm going to go GWS. So, yep, they're going to break through for their first premiership. And we'll go with the top eight. No particular order. So we've obviously got both Adelaide GWS. Who do you reckon stays and goes from the current standings of the AFL top eight?
Top eight, I think top four, the only thing that will change will be Richmond. Definitely yep will not be sitting in the top four by the end of the season.
So who's the top four? Adelaide, GWS, Geelong and Doggies?
I think Doggies.
Yep.
Dogs, I reckon, will be on the path for success this year. I think they want to prove themselves.
Yep.
So I think we'll have an Adelaide, GWS, Geelong, Western Bulldogs
top four. All right, we both agree on that. And our bottom four?
Bottom four?
I'm going to go Port. I'll go Melbourne, St Kilda and... don't know about West Coast.
What about Richmond?
Oh, yeah, Richmond. All right, Port, Melbourne, St Kilda, Richmond. There you go. West Coast out.
I think West Coast are out too. I actually think, I think I'm going to say the same as you. Definitely. No. I have to. I'm looking at it now and I'm like, oh, I just can't see Fremantle or Essendon getting in there.
Well, if Collingwood can consistently produce performances like they did today, they'll be in.
True. If that's a thing.
Yeah.
If, exactly. There's so many ifs at the moment. But I have to say with you, but I would like to see Essendon be number eight, I think, in the place of maybe West Coast.
Interesting. Yeah. Very interesting. All right, we'll move away now from AFL. We'll move to some tennis. And there's been a lot of talk about Sharapova this week. She lost in the semi-final this week. And Eugenie Bouchard commented earlier in the week that drugs cheats... referring to Sharapova, of course, should never be allowed back into the sport they cheated in. So, in this case, it's tennis. So, is this a fair call with regards to Sharapova?
I think with Sharapova, I think it's very hard.
Because let's be honest, she's copped a nice treatment. She's,
that's what I was about to
she's
say.
She's been very
yeah
cushy her whole career with tennis.
She's always kind of had the red carpet rolled out to her.
Yeah.
Like, no matter what has happened, which is purely just because she's been very, very marketable
yeah
for the game. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So she's always had that red carpet rolled out to her. And whether it was the right decision for them in Stuttgart to give her a wild card, yep, I'm not sure. I'm very torn about it. I'm like, I understand them wanting to get her as the player that she is, the image, the brand that she is, to get her back into the game. Also, from a marketing or perspective, gets people to watch because Sharapova's coming back from a doping ban. They put her in the game, more viewers, ticket sell, whatever. But then also there's obviously the cheating side of it.
Yeah.
When you do something like that, you probably should be forced to fight your way back in.
Yeah. Which is what is happening. I think they're talking about Roland Garros, the French Open, that she may have to... They're not giving her a wild card spot.
Yeah.
So the only way she can play through is qualifying through the qualifying stages for like to get a wild card spot rather than just receiving it on merit. So I think, yes, from a marketing perspective, it's great because they're going to watch either way.
Mm.
But for an image standpoint, it's not good for tennis at all.
Yeah.
And there's been several cases in the past about drug cheating and not just that, match fixing as well. Mm. So just another issue that toes the line. And as good as Sharapova has been for the sport, I think you just... this would be a very good statement from the ITF to stamp out doping. So if they can do this, first time it's really like happened to a major superstar, they're able to do this, set off on a good standard, it really sends out a message to the rest of the tennis world.
Exactly. I think there should maybe be put a rule in place where players can't just be handed their ticket back into the sport. That if you've been done doping, you definitely should probably have to fight your way back in, as I said. And I think that is what made so many players sort of have this uproar over the decision, which I think was very, very warranted, because you can't just be have the red carpet rolled out for you every single time.
Yep.
Yeah.
Spot on. All right, we'll move on to NBA right now, and the playoffs are heating up. We are close to the second round. If we've got one final first round matchup, which is between the LA Clippers and Utah Jazz, which will take place tomorrow morning in Los Angeles. So, Lucy, who is your prediction for that matchup?
I think Jazz, I think, will just win, just because I know that the Clippers have their injury troubles, and they're without their star Blake Griffin.
Yep, Blake Griffin.
Great Griffin. I didn't even say his name right in the end. Blake Griffin. I know that they are without him, and Utah have sort of pushed for the game seven, so I feel like going into this, they probably have a little bit of the momentum, and might come out as the surprise winners. It's a bit of a surprise, isn't it? Jazz getting through.
Definitely. I want Jazz to win, but I just got this feeling that LA is going to pull through. Just in midway through the match, Chris Paul, he told Paul Pierce that you are not going to finish your career in Utah. And I just think if he pulls that line out again, you're not going to finish career here in the first round. That'll be the next statement, hopefully.
Yeah.
I just think LA will just, they'll just pull through. And this has got to be the year that they go far, because it's just been way too many seasons under Doc Rivers, and just with all these injuries to their core of their talent, it's just, this has to be the year that they actually do well.
Mm.
It's just been too long that they've been there, here and there. They should be pretty much a Western Conference Finals team.
Mm.
The way, the talent that they've got, the coaching staff that they provided, it's just been too long that it's happened, and I don't think they won't make the conference finals, because the winner out of this will play Golden State. So,
and I think that's a given.
So, yeah, I just think they've got to win, and I think they will.
Yeah, that'd be a good lineup if it was Clippers versus Golden State, two Californian teams.
So even if it was, so we'll move on to now our second round predictions. So even if it was LA or Utah against the Warriors, we'd both say Warriors win that.
I'd say Warriors, the way that they blazed through the Portland Trail Blazers. It's hard. It's hard for them.
You didn't say that because it is radio, but she's just gone like a really deliberate pun.
A bit of a finger point.
Yeah, as you do with puns.
Yeah, exactly. I think with form like that, and Stephen Curry is a big game player, so I think GWS will just have to come away. They'd have to.
Yeah, GWS.
GSW. The screen, it says GSW. And
so Greater Western Sydney are just taking the world by storm
now.
They've also got an NBA team.
Hopefully Toby Green, you know, doesn't have to come up the tribunal in the playoffs. His suspension might not come through on that one.
He's had a couple of those.
Yeah.
All right, in the other Western Conference matchup, this is huge. This is the hardest to predict. San Antonio Spurs and the Houston Rockets, the number 2 and number 3 seed, respectively.
I want to say San Antonio just because there's an Australian playing for them.
Who is that Australian?
Patty Mills. Got it. I got it. What did I say last time?
I don't know.
I can't.
Yeah.
Oh.
You might have said him. I don't know. We'll see. For me, San Antonio haven't looked their greatest. I mean, we knew them and Memphis were going to be a little bit of a scrappy one. I want to say them, but I've just got this feeling Houston with James Harden, and just the way he's been able to... The season has been incredible, just how he's able to transition from shooting guard to point guard and just get his players more involved now. So I like Houston. I reckon they'll beat San Antonio. So move on now to the Eastern Conference. So we'll start off with Boston and Washington.
Boston have come off a really hard sort of seven... They had to play seven games, didn't they?
Six.
Six. Six. Well, still, those six games very hard games. They were all quite tight.
They lost their first two as well.
Yeah, so they had to come back. They had to put in the hard yards. So I don't know. I feel like they might be a bit tired, but then I also think they might want to pull through. They would want to keep that going. Honestly, I don't know how Washington fared against Atlanta, so I can't comment on that. What's going on there, Ben?
Well, Washington, they were pretty convincing. I mean, Atlanta, they haven't been as good as they have in previous years. So, I mean, obviously, losing Millsap and... Was it Millsap they lost? Boston. Who's playing at Boston for them? Horford, they lost. And Kyle Korver, great shooter for them. They just haven't been at their best since they made the Eastern Conference Finals a couple of years ago. So, yeah, Washington, very well in that. And I think they do beat Boston in the... In the second round. They've just had a better record during the season. I remember one of the matches they wore black to the match, just
Ooh.
Going to Boston's funeral,
which
is what Boston did to Chicago also in this season, in this series. So I think Washington will get Boston. I mean, Boston just, with Rajon Rondo playing for Chicago Bulls, and there's been so much talk about Rondo, how bad he is for the lineup for the Bulls, but he produced in his first two games. I think he had 20 assists or something in his first two matches, and the point guards for the rest of the four matches only got two or three combined.
Whoa. That's
the starting
good.
Point guards.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go Washington that one, and the last second round playoff, which is in the Eastern Conference, is Cleveland and Toronto.
This is probably the same as Golden State. I almost say Greater Western again. Golden. I think that's like Golden State. You just have to say Toronto. I mean, you just have to say Cleveland, don't you?
Yeah, you definitely got to say Toronto.
Part of me just wanted to say you would like Toronto to win. You know,
yeah.
It's always good when an underdog wins, but Cleveland, like Golden State, just too good.
Yep, I'm going to go with Cleveland as well. And we'll just quickly breeze through the rest of the topics. I've just had a look at the time and we're doing pretty well, even though we thought we wouldn't. So just the NBA, they've got a new awards night format that is happening at the conclusion of the finals, which is on June the 26th. So they'll be announcing the MVP, Rookie of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year, Sixth Man of the Year, Most Improved Player, and Coach of the Year. Do you like it?
I like it. Because as it says here, they used to just announce them via press release.
Which is a bit dull.
Which is so dull. Imagine just checking your emails and being like, imagine being Stephen Curry, being undisputed MVP, and just checking your emails and being like, cool. Just like in your undies in bed.
Yeah.
Just like awesome. Like, you know, at least this time they get to get up on the stage, receive it from Drake.
Because previously they'd go in front of their crowd, their fans obviously, and collect it, but I like this. It's sort of like a Brownlow night.
It's nice.
NBA's version of the Brownlow.
Brownlow. And it's nice to get awards like that in front of your peers.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, sure, it's nice to get in front of your fans, but I think all players would kind of say, I'd rather get presented this award in front of my peers, in front of my coach and my players and the rest of the league. So I think this is a good initiative by the NBA. And, you know, everyone loves a good award night, a good red carpet, you know. I'm sure we'll see a best and worst dressed.
All right, we'll move on to A-League now, and a couple of matches are just concluded. So Sydney last night defeated Perth Glory 3-0 and Victory 1-0. So who wins it?
Well, very exciting, Big Blue.
Mm-hmm.
Very exciting. Sam, one of the hosts of the sports desk on a Friday, he's actually made plans to go up to Sydney for the final. So that'll be big. But I think they're going to have the Big Blue. I think it's going to be a huge game. Like,
massive, yeah.
There'll be what's the capacity of ANZ Stadium in Sydney? Do you know?
Is it played at ANZ? They're playing it, or Allianz?
Allianz. Oh, I don't know. But
if it's Allianz, it's about 45, 40. If it's ANZ, there's about 90.
Okay, well, I think they'll play it at the 45,000 one.
Yeah.
And I reckon they'll get 45,000. I reckon that.
They should pack it out easily.
They should easily pack that out. And it's hard to call. Sydney,
I'm going Victory.
Sydney FC, winners of the league.
Mm.
Melbourne Victory, always been good in finals.
Yeah, that's why I've got Victory. Plus, it's just, even though as good as Sydney has been in the modern era, it's been not mostly uncommon, but we've just seen time and time again where teams have been so dominant through the season, but have faltered in finals. So I think that'll be the case for Sydney, unfortunately.
Yeah, I'm going to say Melbourne victory as well, just because it'd be good to see Kevin Muscat win a title and Berisha sort of play out a great season. Weary Court kicked 100 goals, and so it'd be good to see Melbourne victory win.
Sticking with the A-League, are we fans of the video system? Because we are the first league in the world to trial it.
Mm.
So, and this is, they're going to be able to contribute with offside calls and on the field calls as well as obviously goal line technology. So, how are we liking it so far?
So far, I think they've done it well, but it's hard because in the Sydney final, the two of the goals were allowed through the video assistant referee.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard when it's in games like that where there's so much on the line, and obviously they won 3-1. So if those goals did end up being disallowed, would have gone to extra time, could have been a different story for Brisbane Roar.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, as always with technology, it's only as good as the people behind it.
Yeah.
And
I think it's good in theory. Mm. It'll just take time to develop. So obviously we're going to see a couple of these mistakes, but yeah, definitely a great idea, because there's just been so many cases in the past where players have been massively offside and refs have just missed it. So
yeah.
it's going to be great.
So it's good. Yeah, it's good they kind of have that person watching on in their ear, being like, oh, we need to review that call or the decision or whatever. And it's also nice to see Australia sort of in the forefront or something like this.
It's really good, especially with soccer as well.
Yeah, exactly.
So we'll finish on now. This is a general sporting question, but this happened with netball earlier in the week. The Netball Association, what they did was they censored the commentary team because there were a couple of big outs in their hierarchy, so like the CEO went.
The chairman of the board, and then
chairman of the board, yeah.
One of ex-player Catherine, can't remember her last name, but she was also outed by the board.
Yep.
In a call that very much upset the players, so there was talk of like sort of strike action and things like that. And Liz Ellis, who is a part of the commentary team for the Super Netball, also wrote a scathing opinion piece for Fairfax as well. So I think that's where sort of this question. I'm not sure if they did make them, they did ask them or did censor them, or whether they just asked. But Netball certainly put it out there that they didn't want the commentators to talk about what had been happening behind the scenes.
Yep, so that's basically the background of the question. So, yeah we believe, not 100% certain, that Netball basically told the commentary team, don't want you to talk about what's happened in the week. Is it ever okay for sporting organisations to censor commentary teams?
Well, I think this is just like you asking, like, is it okay for the government to censor the media?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
What we talk about.
Like, what we talk about. I think, as much as that's a very overblown example, but when you put it sort of in its paces, it's like that's what commentators are there for. They're there to commentate on the game.
Yeah.
Sort of like hold players, coaches, officials to account. Like, as much as they are there to sort of tell you what's happening in a game and keep you updated, they're also there to hold these people to account. And so I think because there was a huge uproar by the players, they were threatening to not play for the Australian team in sort of games in later in the season. I think the commentary team should have been talking about it, could have been talking about it when it's such a big event like that. So I don't think it's ever okay for the sporting organisations to ask them to censor them. What do you think?
Yeah, definitely. I agree with that. I mean, A, if it is found out in the media that the organisation did tell the commentary team not to talk about it, it's a bad look. Mm. And B, we're allowed to talk whatever we want. I mean, let's be honest, the media, it's great that we're allowed to talk about all these topics, have the freedom of speech we do in this country and, in the sporting world as well. So why not utilise it? And if it is such a topic like this, why not talk about it?
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
It's great. The media is for this. They're supposed to be for and against it.
Mm.
It's the great part about media, and the public get to choose which side they're on, whatever. Mm. And it's censoring commentary teams and media is just never good, because from now on in, the media will be like, oh, okay, Netball, they censored that.
Mm.
They're not going to be really approachable anymore to go to them to want to like interview their players anymore. So.
Yeah.
It's just not good overall, and it sends a bad message.
Yeah, that's true. It does send a bad message. And healthy debate. It's always good.
It's great.
Always good to have healthy debate.
That's what we do here on the Sports Desk.
Exactly, yeah.
Great segue to our ending. So that is it for this week's Sports Desk podcast here on Sin. We hope you've enjoyed listening to us. And so far, we are 2 from 2.
We've been
consistent. So we'll see you in a fortnight's time. Well, we won't see you. We'll talk to you in a fortnight's time. Hope you've enjoyed listening to our dulcet tones. And From all us here, from Lucy and myself, we hope you've enjoyed this week's edition where we have talked nothing but sport, the games which unite the people of the world.
Beautiful.